I would call the Commerce Committee to order. It's Monday, March 11th. We have two important bills on the agenda today. We have Senate File 556 that deals with odometer meters, snowmobiles. And then we have Senate File 662, the Lori ACA Conformity Market Rule Bill. So they're both important bills, and I think we'll start out with Senator Seaman. Are you ready to? This is Senate File 556. Senator Seaman, you may proceed.
It's okay.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate File 556 passed out of the Environment Committee last week, and essentially what the bill does is it prohibits the tampering with odometers for snowmobiles and other off-highway vehicles. And so with me today to testify, if you'd like, or to offer his support is Doug Franzen from the Minnesota Snowmobilers Association. We also heard in the Environment Committee from representatives from Polaris and some other folks from the Off-Highway Vehicle Association, and they are supportive of this bill. This time I don't know of any opposition to it. It came to my attention because of a constituent who purchased a snowmobile where the odometer had been rolled back, and we came to find out that right now that's not illegal to do in Minnesota. So that's simply what the bill does. But this has nothing to do with titling. I've said that over and over, or I'm trying to say that over and over just to give everyone assurances that we're not moving in that direction. I'm happy to stand for questions.
That seems strange that it's not the law of the land today. But, Mr. Franzen, did you wish to say a couple words?
Sure, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Doug Franzen. I represent, I'm an attorney for Minnesota United Snowmobilers Association. Mr. Chairman, this is a real good bill. Back in the day when I had a full head of hair, the legislature...
I've known you for a long time. You really did, huh?
Mr. Chairman, it's never easy in this committee.
Mr. Franzen, I'm sorry.
Well, a long time ago, the legislature passed a consumer fraud statute, which clearly said you cannot turn back an odometer on a motor vehicle, on a car. It's fraud. Since that time, the legislature has passed laws in the consumer fraud statute saying you can't turn back the clock on farm vehicles. What we have discovered, what Senator Seaman brings to light, is an omission. And I think it's an inadvertent omission in the law that ATVs, off-road motorcycles, snowmobilers, all of which have odometers, and there's nothing in the consumer fraud statute which says it's wrong to turn back and fraudulently sell one of these off-road vehicles. MinUSA, we represent tens of thousands of people. We develop, maintain over 20,000 miles of snowmobile trail in the state. We have constituents in all of your districts. And the investment we put into this is a tenfold annual return to the state in terms of tourism and jobs. We strongly support Senator Seaman in this measure. It's common sense. It's straightforward. I'm also authorized to speak for the ATV group at VAM, the motorcycle people, and all of the affected groups who also wish to be protected against the possibility of an unscrupulous person turning back an odometer. And it conforms the statutory definition to what it really is, Mr. Chairman, and that's fraud. That's all I got to say.
Senator Kosoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Franzen. And first of all, I like the look, you know, personally.
What would you expect from Senator?
Anyway, when would the effective date be of this bill?
I believe it would be August 1st. Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, it would be August 1st, and we think that's probably fine because we're between seasons where people There's not going to be a lot of snowmobiles or ATVs purchased between now and August. Possibly ATVs.
Yeah, if it's not prescribed in the bill, I understand that it's August 1 is automatic, so that's what I think.
That is correct.
Senator Ahsoka?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, I'm just wondering if there's a benefit of earlier or if there's drawbacks earlier. What were your thoughts there?
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, we hadn't discussed the effective date prior to this, but so I'd kind of leave it at the committee's discretion, or if Mr. Franzen thinks it needs to be earlier, we could certainly do that. But otherwise, as you said, by not having it prescribed, it will be August 1st.
But Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, it really makes no difference for snowmobiles, but for our friends in the ATV community, I can see someone purchasing an ATV for the summer season. So I think your point may be very well taken.
Senator Gazelka?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how I would draft the language, but I'd like to enact it immediately after passage. I just assumed that it was already law, and if it's not, and there's a practice that it occasionally happens, I think we ought to correct it.
Good point.
I think those ATVs will be, another month and a half or 2 months will be out there. We'll work on that. We might be changing that date. Senator Dames, did you have a comment before?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't have a question, but I think this is a good bill, and I want to thank Senator Stephen for bringing it forward. Thank you.
Before that, Senator Carlson, did you have a comment? Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Stephen, does this you said that it must be another place in law that the hour meters on farm equipment is also covered. Now, how about those vehicles that may still have an hour meter, for instance, like these lawn tractors that are getting pretty sophisticated and pretty large?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, that would not apply to those types of vehicles. It's specifically designated, as you'll see, as off-road recreational vehicles. And originally the bill was drafted just to include snowmobiles, and then the ATVs and off-road motorcyclists came forward and wanted to be included. So we changed that, and, we're keeping the scope that way at this point. Or that's our intention, to keep it at that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, I'm wondering if that should be included. And also, I'm trying to think of other vehicles that may slip through the cracks. I think a Segway is not considered a motor vehicle at this time. But I believe they have some sort of odometer on them or a readout. And should they be included in something?
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, it's not that I'm opposed to including other vehicles that we didn't consider, but at this time, since we have the support of the off-road vehicle groups, I'd prefer that we just keep it at this, because I don't know what the law says, for instance, for the other things that you have mentioned. So
A couple of these issues, and I would suggest, Senator Carlson, you might be on the right track, but let her carry this forward. Okay. It's a very important bill. If you have some other ideas, maybe you could draft something later. Would that be all right with you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. Do we have a date change, Senator Kasoka?
Mr. Chair, the one thing I'm wondering about is this will affect penalties and remedies, and I think I'd prefer to work with the author and just make sure that we don't have any unintended consequences of not giving people a heads up that upon enactment. I like the idea. I just want to make sure we're heading the right direction.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, if this bill passes this committee, it's been requested by Judiciary. So if we would have a little bit of time, I think it's scheduled to be heard in Judiciary later in the week to look for that in terms of especially since it would impact the penalties. As you said, it could be appropriate for Judiciary.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, because as I look at this, and counsel has said it's a gross misdemeanor, I think that's up to a year in jail. So I think we probably ought to make sure we get it right. But I think we ought to explore that.
Happy to.
Further discussion on Senate File 556. Senator Ryder.
Thank you, Chair Metzen. One thought might be with doing the work at your next committee stop would be just the 30 days upon enactment. Then you know, we don't know exactly when that date will be, but it gives the public a month's notice and the interest groups a month's notice, and yet it's not all the way out to August. I'm sure it will be sooner than that. So.
I'd support that.
We should do that here, though, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
I think that's a good. I think we ought to set those dates in this committee. I really
okay.
do.
Mr.
So
Chair.
If, the committee feels that 30 days, and the author does, I think we're going to do it here.
Okay. Sounds good.
Right.
Great.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, Senator Ryder moves that. Everybody understand that 30 days gives people a little chance, but at the same token, let's get it enacted. So, on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Want me to read it in?
Staying.
The amendment would be as follows on page 2 after. Line 15, insert section 6 with a headnote of effective date and language. This act is effective 30 days after final enactment.
I had discussion on that, writer, a motion. Senator Dave.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question, and I don't know who could answer this, but how would it work with then somebody that has a snowmobile, they've already turned the mileage back, this gets enacted, then they would need to, obviously, I'm assuming, make a note in the sales agreement that the mileage is inaccurate or it has been turned back? What do you do if you've already turned it back? You had 8,000 on it, you turned back to 5, and now you want to sell it under this rule. Do we then have a provision to where they can just declare that it had about 8 on it, roll back to 5? Because they can't roll it back up to 8, I mean, and still sign a statement, because if they're off a mile, they'd be in trouble. How does that get handled?
Did you have a...
Yeah, yes,
comment on that?
I did, Mr. Chairman. Under Section 4, Subdivision 4, this bill anticipates that situation by simply saying it requires disclosure. Because there are a lot of recreational vehicles that the odometer is not inaccurate through no bad intent by anyone's part. All the law says is you have to tell somebody.
That's on lane 2.5 or 2.6 on the page 2. It's covered. Okay. On the Reinhardt amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Kasaka moves that Senate File 556 as amended be recommended to pass and forwarded to the Judiciary Committee. Anybody in the audience want to be heard on this? Seeing that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next bill on the agenda, Senate File 662, Senator Lori, Federal Affordable Care Act, formerly. Now we have about at least 12. Witnesses today on this important bill. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We have 662 before you. A couple of things. I've got a couple of author's amendments. I appreciate the committee's indulgence getting those on the bill to have it in the shape I wish to carry it forward in. The first would be the A3. If somebody would be kind enough to offer that, that would be a delete everything amendment, and that's what we would then step through.
Okay, this is a author's amendment to get the bill in shape, and we'll be discussing it. Senator Dahl moves the A3 amendment for Senator Lori. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. And this is an author's. I think he's got a couple that.
Right. I've just got one more. Children's Hospital was hoping to be an essential community provider and should be, and that was intended to be able to delete everything, but we missed it somehow in the drafting, and so the A6 would also be an amendment to the A3 that I'd like the current author's amendment as well, and that would be the extent of it.
Mr. Chair, I move the
author's
A6.
Amendment.
A8, I'm told, huh?
The A6.
Mr. Stang.
Mr. Chairman, the A6 was tweaked and it's now the A8.
If we could get the committee's indulgence and get me a copy of the A8, okay.
Picky. This is a children's hospital one.
Yeah, this is the children's hospital one.
Talked about on a number of occasions. And
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Latz.
Does this also cover AMPLATS?
Maybe counsel could help me with that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, I'm not familiar with AMPLATS.
University.
And where did I draft the A8 amendment?
Oh, the universities.
Mr. Chairman, the language reads a hospital specializing in the treatment of patients under 21 years of age.
That'll cover it. Thank you.
Senator Latz, I'm informed by the Department of Health as well that it should cover.
Yes.
Okay, this children's will go in the Article 1 part of the further discussion on this amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Reinhart.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So then, with Senate File 662 in the shape that I hope to carry it forward in, I'm going to let the Department of Commerce and the Department of Health do a bit of a presentation on what's actually in the bill. I'll just have a few prefatory comments to give you kind of a idea of the goals that we're trying to do. Article 1, which is the bulk of the pages, is really just amending current law to conform with the requirements of the Affordable Care Act. Our industry market-wide in the state of Minnesota has already come into compliance with the Affordable Care Act and is doing this, but by putting it in Minnesota law, it also gives Minnesota the authority to enforce these requirements instead of having to go to the feds for enforcement of any of these provisions that, again, have already been largely adopted. Under some of those major provisions are that under the Affordable Care Act, insurers are no longer allowed to deny coverage, impose pre-existing conditions or exclusions, or rate premiums based on health status. And under these new rules, insurers will naturally have an incentive to minimize their financial risk, and insurers will have the financial incentive to attract the least risky and youngest and healthiest populations by offering lower cost catastrophic and bronze plans in order to attract them instead of offering the silver and gold plans required on the exchange. And so that moves us kind of into the general principles behind Article 2, which is the smaller but probably the one where there's more issues. Article 2 is really about the ACA also requires risk adjustment market-wide, inside and outside the exchange, that will really help address the issue by taking funds from insurers with less risk to compensate insurers with more risk. But multiple experts have said over and over that risk adjustment will really not truly and fully compensate insurers for enrolling higher-risk individuals with health conditions. So insurers will continue to be incented to attract the healthier populations. In fact, the Congressional Budget Office, this is a direct quote from them, is that risk adjustment systems tend to overpredict the cost of beneficiaries who end up with low health care spending and underpredict the cost of those who end up with higher health care spending. Risk adjustment is very difficult to do with sufficient accuracy to ensure that insurers are actually fairly compensated for the populations they enroll. So, I mean, the real gist of this is that risk adjustment is still a serious issue for the market. And so the main point is that we need a market that fairly compensates insurers for effectively managing and improving the health of people with health conditions. This is how we can truly reduce healthcare costs and premiums for everyone, and we really can't continue to keep premiums low just by segmenting risk and increasing cost sharing. That's not true cost containment. That's just cost shifting between risk segmentations. And so that's what we're trying to get at with Article 2. And really, we recognize that people with many different various viewpoints have concerns about this bill, and I want to acknowledge that right off the bat. And let folks know that I really do appreciate the feedback and look forward to continuing to make this bill a better bill and assure people that it is my true intent to make sure that we do still have a viable and competitive market outside of the exchange. And I think that through a broad stakeholder process that still has a long way to go with Article 1 and Article 2 together, we can accomplish those goals of making sure that we still have ACA conformity and that we have a level playing field that protects consumers as well and protects an active marketplace both inside and outside the exchange. So with those just introductory comments, I'll turn it over to Health and Commerce to give us a walkthrough. I believe you have a handout that is a slide presentation that will kind of give us a better idea of exactly what's in that bill.
Okay, who wants to start there and always identify yourself with a tape?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Alyssa Von Ruden. I'm the Health Policy Advisor with the Department of Commerce, and I am going to start by going through very briefly, I hope, the longer part of this bill, which is the Affordable Care Act conformity section. It's technical conformity, and there are a couple of points I just wanted to call your attention to what the bill actually does. So as Senator Lurie described, this whole first Article 1 of the bill is meant to align state law with the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. This is in part to make sure that Minnesota continues to have the authority to oversee and to enforce our insurance market. And these are changes that apply to the entire marketplace. The provisions do go into effect in, first of all, there are a number of provisions that are in effect currently. So as Senator Lurie mentioned, these are things that our insurers are already doing, but then there are a number of changes that go into effect on January 1st, 2014 as well. So the brief overview of what happens to go into effect, or that is already in effect right now, includes coverage for children up to age 26 on their parents' plan, the elimination of pre-existing condition exclusions for kids. There are no longer the ability to rescind coverage unless there's cases of fraud. Coverage for emergency services without any pre-authorization. There was some previous state law that allowed limitations on out-of-network services for emergency care. And there is also limitations on the restrictions for lifetime and annual maximum limits, so you can't have lifetime maximum benefits on your policy anymore. It also currently in effect includes full coverage for preventive care services, expanded coverage for women's health services. I'll note that Minnesota law already had some provisions that allowed direct access to OBGYN services. However, this is just tightening that up a little bit in the language in the law. Some changes to the appeals and the external review process to be a little bit more consumer-focused, and again, aligning our law with that. We actually do a pretty good job of that here in Minnesota already, so it's just some technical changes around that. And then also a uniform summary of benefits and coverage forms to allow more transparency in coverage. So these are things that are already taking place today. Starting January 1, 2014, there is guaranteed issue and guaranteed renewability. So when somebody buys a plan, they can continue to get that plan, and they also won't be denied for having pre-existing condition limitations. The essential health benefits package is now required. The metal levels, which we've probably heard about previously, are now required across the market. So this is your bronze, silver, gold, platinum level coverage, and it refers to the actuarial value level of the plans. And then the premium rate variation limits, which include rating variations based on age, geographic area, and tobacco use only. There aren't other limitations that are allowed anymore. And then also on January 1st, 2014, there are specific cost-sharing and out-of-pocket limits that apply across the market. The elimination of specific benefit dollar limits, so you can't cap coverage for any individual item or service based on a dollar amount. There's coverage for clinical trials for life-threatening conditions is now required. And there's also an extended grace period for payment of premiums for qualified health plans. So you get 90 days to be able to keep your coverage to allow you to try and pay back the premiums. So, and then I'll just reinforce again that this first part of the bill is really important for us to be able to show overall enforcement authority for both the Department of Health and for the Department of Commerce to show that we are compliant with the federal law and be able to continue to regulate our own insurance market here in Minnesota.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Article
1.
Go ahead.
My name is Manny Munson-Regala. I'm the Assistant to the Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health. and I'll be talking about Article 2, the market rules section of the bill. The purpose of Article 2, as Senator Laurie has said, is to promote the health and protect consumers throughout Minnesota, no matter where they purchase their insurance product. Secondly, the intent of Article 2 is to minimize the risk of adverse selection. As Senator Laurie has noted, there are a number of provisions intended to address adverse selection, but states have the ability to take other additional steps to ensure adverse selection does not occur. Lastly, the purpose of Article 2 is to allow plans to move their competition from risk selection to focus on competing on the basis of quality and value for consumers. Other goals of Article 2 are to respond to changes in federal law. We should also note that a number of the provisions in Article 2 are based on existing state law. And then lastly, Article 2 has the ability or has the effect of clarifying the roles between the sister agencies, Commerce and Health, as to who will be enforcing which topics. So let me talk a little bit about sort of the background about what brought us here. We've talked already about that the Affordable Care Act changes the individual and the small group market in and inside and outside the exchange already. Alyssa has run through a number of the changes that apply to the entire marketplace inside and outside the exchange. The ACA was intended to encourage insurers to compete on quality, value, and service instead of risk segmentation. And we would also note that current state law has some differences between current HMO and insurer regulation, so Article 2 gives us a chance to reach some degree of conformity between those two segments. With respect to the consumer protection aspects of Article 2, it's our hope that uniform regulatory standards will protect consumers no matter where they buy insurance. They're intended to enhance consumers' access to quality health care and lead them to healthier outcomes. And we fully recognize, as the Senator has alluded, that we need to balance that against the health carrier's need to be innovative and provide for affordable products, both inside and outside the exchange. With respect to competition, we've talked about that there are certain elements in the Affordable Care Act that are intended to reduce adverse selection, but it is our opinion that they will not prevent it. So there is, in fact, things like risk adjustment and risk pooling, which will make significant steps, but there still continues to be a risk of adverse selection. We are concerned that for plans participating in the exchange, they don't end up in a situation where participating creates opportunities for adverse selection. We believe also, as the Senator has noted, that uniform standards allow risk adjustment, which is intended to be one of the big tools to deal with adverse selection, to work more properly. We reached this conclusion not in isolation. It's the opinion of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners that one of the most important things states can do is to make sure there's a level playing field between participants inside and outside the exchange. The ACA does not require insurers to participate in exchange, and plans offered by insurers outside the exchange do not have to meet all the same exchange plan standards. States, however, may establish stronger requirements, which is part of the intent of our Article 2. And I've provided a link to the NAIC's discussion around adverse selection issues and their impact on exchanges. Insurers have also agreed on the need to address adverse selection. In a November 22, 2011 letter to the Maryland Exchange, Kaiser Permanente wrote, "The market rules must be the same inside and outside the exchange. Different rules will provide incentives to game one market or the other and can provide the opportunity for adverse selection." In a 2011 PricewaterhouseCoopers study, adverse selection was the top insurer concern about participating in the exchange. We would note that our work on market rules is not unique to Minnesota. Other states have, in fact, acted to deal with the issue of adverse selection and uniform market rules. Probably the most dramatic effort by any of the states, the District of Columbia and Vermont require all their individual and small group markets to be sold in the exchange. If you don't have different markets, you don't have the risk of adverse selection. Our Article 2 does not propose requiring all products to be sold in the exchange. Maryland requires participation by all carriers in the shop exchange to ensure, again, a reduction of risk of adverse selection. In addition, their exchange is the only place to purchase catastrophic coverage. Oregon requires that their exchange is also the only place to buy catastrophic coverage. The importance of those requirements to require catastrophic coverage is to provide the exchange an incentive to attract healthy, younger, lower-risk individuals. Washington requires plans offering bronze plans to also sell silver and gold plans. Again, the exchange is the only place to buy catastrophic coverage. California requires participating insurers who participate in their exchange to sell all metal levels inside and outside. And again, the exchange is the only place to buy catastrophic coverage. With that as sort of background, we're now going to turn to the more significant sections of the Article 2 bill, and I'm going to toss it to Alyssa to talk about the metal levels and actual value section.
So the
Senator, before that, Senator Kosoka.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I see that you talked about the NAIC model, and which I, for many things, I agreed with. I don't think that model is saying that we should adopt Article 2, number one, and number two, we didn't follow it for active purchasers. Anyway, just a comment there. But when you talk about adverse selection, are you talking about people wanting to buy outside the exchange because inside the exchange it's more expensive? Is that the adverse selection you're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, a few comments. So with respect to the NAIC Model Act, I happened to be on the subcommittee when I was at the Department of Commerce that drafted the Model Act. I can tell you that the Model Act was silent on whether or not a state should be an active selector. We recognized that was a policy assessment for states to decide what to do. With respect to the issue of adverse selection, the concern is that purchasing risk pools in the past have suffered when essentially plans have the ability to cherry pick outside those risk pools. If you have a set of standards that apply only to the plans inside a risk pool, then the folks that that you would expect, for example, if you have only a rich benefit set available inside a risk pool, the most likely purchasers of that benefit would be folks with a significant degree of medical needs. So you do end up with the colloquial phrase, a debt spiral, where the folks in the purchasing pool end up being sicker, or expensive coverage. So that drives that kind of continued erosion of the quality of the pool. If the senator would like, I can send him an article, an editorial written by the former chair of the Texas Insurance Purchasing Alliance, who made the assessment that one of the biggest concerns about purchasing pools is, in fact, this concern about adverse selection.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, related to the adverse selection, if we're trying to, you know, the pool could be bigger, which would reduce the adverse selection. There's a number of groups that are trying to make sure they're not in there. For example, the bill that we heard on public employee insurance program for public educators, they want to make sure they're not in there. So there's ways that we could try to build that pool. But I know we're going to go into detail on Article 2, but I hope that we also have Commissioner Vandehei talk about the consequences of many of the sections in Article 2, but I want to hear from Commerce as well, because I'm pretty sure the question I'm going to ask is, will these things increase the cost of products outside the exchange? And I think they will, but I want to get a feel for how much. So.
Okay.
Are we back to metal levels?
Yes.
Okay, for the metal levels and actuarial value section of Article 2, there's, first of all, an Affordable Care Act requires that qualified health plans that would be offered through the exchange be offered at different cost-sharing levels. So the Affordable Care Act requires that they're offered at a silver and gold level at a minimum. You can offer more than that, but you have to offer a silver and a gold if you're going to offer any plans in the exchange. So this part of the bill would extend that requirement to all health carriers in the marketplace in order to make sure that the choice is the same whether you're in the exchange or outside of the exchange. Without this requirement, the carriers that were selling in the exchange could potentially be at a disadvantage to carriers that were outside the exchange if they were to they only sell bronze plans or some kind of catastrophic coverage. So this is to try and alleviate that. And going back to the adverse selection issue, that if you have carriers that are within the exchange that are offering a higher level or a higher value plan, that they may attract more sick individuals. So I'll also go on to talk a little bit about the information disclosures section. And this section is another adaptation of the language that's from the Affordable Care Act. It really is included to make sure that the transparent information is available to consumers, make it easier for them to shop and compare plans. So there's a number of different things that we would require for insurers to provide to us, which includes claims payment policies, numbers on enrollment, disenrollment, financial practices, rating practices, and then cost-sharing history along with that. So all of that information would then be available to consumers as well. So this also helps us as regulators be able to assess the state of the market in general. And before I hand it back to Manny, I'll talk just briefly about marketing standards. This is, again, an ACA requirement. You have to have non-deceptive marketing standards. We do require this in state law as well, but this is to get a little bit more specific to say that you can't discourage sick people from enrolling in any plan that you offer, wherever it would be offered in the marketplace. And the requirements built into this section, some of the specific requirements, are based around what does already exist in state and federal law and trying to strengthen that for the marketplace as a whole. Back to Mandy to talk about network.
Mr. Chair, members, another key or a significant portion of the market rules bill is the section dealing with network adequacy and geo-access. The purpose of network adequacy rules is to ensure consumers have access to sufficient choice of providers and to essential community providers, which is why the amendment dealing with Children's Hospital and the U of M took place. For this year, the plans have been directed by the marketplace that as they prepare their products for submission to the marketplace, they are to comply with the existing HMO standards, health maintenance organization standards, administered by the Department of Health. That gives me an opportunity to bring your attention to a provision about the Articles 2 bill that perhaps you might have missed in your review. The provisions of the Article 2 bill are not effective until January 1st, 2015. We did that for the following reason. We recognize that stakeholders are going to need some time to adopt, particularly the plans, their products and offerings, to be sure that they can get ready in terms of preparing for filing for sale in 2015. So we're hoping that enough with the lead time being provided to them, they'll be in a position to recognize and understand those standards. Some comments about the HMO maintenance standards. They have protected Minnesotans for 20 years, and we believe that they have been a good place to start dialogue. We'd also note that a number of states have common standards for managed care plans for all carriers. That is not the case currently in Minnesota because, as I noted, these are HMO standards. We do not currently have standards for insurance companies. We would also note that Texas, if there's any, for by way of illustration, by other examples on how to deal with network adequacy, has standards that differ for HMOs and PPOs, but they do have standards for those kind of organizations.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kasaka.
Thank you. As far as the network adequacy section, have there been a lot of complaints to the Commerce Department or Health Department about not having adequacy? Is that, I mean, I'm just wondering how that has already been.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gadzalka, I'll let Alyssa answer about whether they receive complaints at Commerce. At the Health Department, the most common complaint we receive is that a provider identified in the network is not actually accepting patients.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Gadzalka, I actually do not know of the complaint history, but I can look into that for you if that information would be helpful.
Somebody behind you wishes to visit with us about that, I think.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Tim Vande. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Commerce in charge of the Insurance Division. And so I thought I could come up here and answer the Senator's question if you'd like.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Vandehay, does this section solve any problems, or is there a problem that was identified that this is trying to solve? And just, that's my first part of that.
Chairman and Senator, I believe that, you know, the market rules section is attempting to try to provide a balanced, fair competition, trying to encourage insurers not to compete on who can attract the healthiest enrollees to their plans, but rather who can provide affordable as well as quality service to their enrollees. This aspect of network adequacy has two major components to it, or significant components to it. First, there certainly is the quality component that much of the Minnesota Department of Health addresses, and then there is a cost component associated with network adequacy. To your question about what problem this is attempting to address, it's attempting to make sure that networks have a uniform enrollees and network in insurers, their networks are adequate to provide service that they would expect from their insurers.
Ms. Elka.
Commissioner Vandehay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I originally asked a question. There's a number of sections here. I don't know how many, six, seven, eight, that to me seem, well, problematic as far as driving up the cost. I would like your comments on, do you think that this will drive up the cost of insurance outside the exchange? And if so, how much? Has there been any calculation on that?
Chair, Senator. There is the possibility that these type of provisions could increase costs on indemnity insurers that have not previously had to have their networks examined by the state of Minnesota. The cost of that, we're not exactly sure. You know, we haven't been able to price an exact cost because you'd have to identify what part of the network was inadequate to handle the requirements being placed on them. However, we continue to have significant discussions with many of the providers and the indemnity insurers to make sure that we're addressing their concerns. One of them would certainly be affordability. Others would be the fact that some indemnity insurers don't have their own networks, and though they rent those networks, so the ability for them to influence provider quality or health outcomes is more limited than an insurer that has their own network. And so we want to make sure that we have a proper balance for that.
So one last. Mr. Chair, thank you. Commissioner Vandehay, then one last follow-up related to that. So at least in that section, the indemnity companies, there really is not an identifiable problem that you've seen that's causing this to move forward. Is that correct?
Sir.
Chairman, Senator, I think the identifiable problem is that we're attempting to reform all of healthcare and make sure that the competition is fair and that people are, the insurers are competing on a basis that allows innovation as well as comparison for Minnesota residents when they're signing up. Previously, we have had, I'm sure that there have been complaints about the adequacy of certain carriers' networks, but I'm not aware of a significant number of those that would drive this provision.
Thank you.
Senator Daves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vandehay, earlier in your comments, you talked about your concern about people trying to market to get the people that have less health issues to try to get a pure pool. And you mentioned something about some of the marketing techniques. Could you tell me, when we have pre-existing condition laws now in place, what do you think companies would be doing to try to solicit only the folks that have less health complications? What kind of techniques do you expect to see that would cause them to be able to do that?
Sir.
Chair, Senator. One of the things that would be a concern about adverse selection for the carriers within the exchange would be if you had all the bronze level plans outside of the exchange, and so consumers purchasing their insurance outside of the exchange would not have the same comparability of higher actuarial value plans that would reside in the exchange. And so if you would presume that an individual might lean towards a higher actuarial value plan, bronze, silver, gold, platinum, with regards to having pre-existing conditions or whether they would have ongoing medical known issues, one would presume that the carriers inside the exchange would be put at a disadvantage if you did not have comparable products outside of the exchange at those metal levels.
How does it work on the you're pretty healthy, can you opt out then and pay the penalty, or how does that work exactly?
I believe that most people, when they have a medical condition that requires them to see the doctor more frequently than a healthier person, will look at, be encouraged to look at plans that provide for more of the cost sharing to be borne by the insurers than lend themselves. So with regards to deductibles or other things, they would not be as concerned about having a higher deductible or a lower value plan because they don't plan on seeing the doctor as routinely as somebody who is suffering from a condition.
That would narrow the pool, I would think. But Senator Kasoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Van de Hey, have there been other situations where we have required certain products to be written by a company in Minnesota?
Van der Hey.
Well, certainly, Chair, Senator, certainly many of the rules we have related to product filings establish minimum requirements for those products. But to the best of my knowledge, I'm not aware in Minnesota that specific products have been required.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if you're done with your presentation yet. Or
I think there's one or two more pages.
Maybe
but
I'll just withhold my question.
Yeah, a couple there. I see two more pages I've got okay. that I think I've
okay.
covered.
You know, maybe I could interject in this conversation, though, that a couple of the tools that carriers have been known to use that we need to try to protect against are attracting healthier people by offering plans at lower metal levels and using less comprehensive networks. And that really does tend to attract a younger, healthier population because it drives the premium cost down, but then it often doesn't work for people when they get sick. And that's the, you know, that's one of the balancing things that we need to try to get to the right place, to have make sure that consumers are getting the coverage that they believe they're buying when they step forward and buy a policy, and but still allow for the competition and the innovation that we really do want to get from the market. But these are legitimate forces that really will benefit a carrier because of how risk adjustment is not a perfect science, and it overestimates the cost. Risk adjustment consistently overestimates the cost for young, healthy individuals in a pool, and it underestimates the cost for higher risk, more expensive populations. And so there still is the very, very real financial incentive for carriers to work very hard through creative means to attract those younger, healthier enrollees. So we'll maybe finish the last two slides, and then we'll
before
have
before that, Senator Kasoka, did you have a question? Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lurie, I'm just trying to – I understand how it used to be, where there was a lot of medical underwriting, and you could – definitely target and get a better group. But now there's, my understanding is there's no medical underwriting anywhere. So it's not, you know, the ability is far less to target a healthy group when you can go anywhere you want, inside or outside the plan, regardless of health. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, there are tools that are effective tools, but not comprehensive tools to avoid the very real risk of adverse selection creeping in to the exchange to undermine the viability of it. So, I mean, there's still more work to be done. I think this is a good conversation. And again, I'll go back to the fact that this is really a process where we need to engage all stakeholders and make sure that we have a very robust conversation and really understand the implications of all of these decisions. And I look forward to that conversation.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lurie, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like our real concern is the young, how, where we place the younger, healthier folks. And it sounds to me like that's the folks that are going to carry the burden of this additional premium we're going to be seeing. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, I believe there will still be a good market for young, healthy folks to go. Many of them will choose to go outside the market, and we'll still have, some of them catastrophic plans if they're under 30 and don't have affordable coverage offered to them. Otherwise, there's bronze plans available. But at the end of the day, you know, some young, healthy people do get sick and do need access to good networks of care when they get sick. And if they don't have a product that really covers their needs, it can be very problematic. And so making sure that insurers are competing on value and cost and good networks rather than on continuing to try to work toward a beneficial risk selection for their enrollees is a good conversation to have. It'll be a very long, in-depth conversation, and we'll really work to engage all stakeholders and try to get to the right balance.
Okay, continue on the last two.
Senator, before I go on to the last two slides, just wanted to answer your question about mandatory offers under Minnesota state law. There's 65B49, auto insurers, if they offer coverage for injury and maintenance of a motor vehicle, they must also offer basic economic loss benefits. So that would be one example where we do require carriers to provide a particular product. I'd also like to address Senator Gazelka's question about sort of marketing practices that might be intended to focus on healthy populations. First, let me start with, I don't believe any of the carriers in Minnesota would ever engage in these kind of practices. This is not their business model. They want to serve Minnesotans. But you could, if you wanted to, open up an office where your products are available after climbing five sets of stairs. No elevator in the building. That's not a deliberate attempt to engage in medical underwriting, but it has the consequence of making sure the only folks who can ever apply for those products are healthy. So the last two slides we have to talk about are about quality assurance and improvement requirements. The ACA requires participants in the exchange to implement and report on a quality improvement strategy. This section would extend that to all carriers in Minnesota. For now, the extent of the requirement under that section is basic reporting that we will require from all of the carriers. Our intent is that at some point, once there is additional federal guidance around what does quality improvement mean, we'll be able to articulate more guidance to our carriers. The last significant item in the Article 2 bill is around the concept of accreditation. Accreditation is a voluntary process currently by carriers. They pick one of two accrediting entities, NCQA or UREC. The standards in accreditation are intended to ensure that carriers have a seal of approval, for lack of a better word. There are two recognized accrediting entities. The law currently only applies accreditation to plans sold in the marketplace. We would ask that all carriers be accredited. The plans have offered some suggestions on whether or not accreditation may serve to meet certain of the other requirements. In other words, if you are accredited, can you get a waiver or deemer for some other items in the market rules bill? We continue to look at that dialogue, and we believe that there may be some opportunities to leverage the work being done by the two accrediting agencies. And that is our presentation, and we stand for more questions.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is Article 2 required by the ACA? I can see where Article 1 I know is important, but to me Article 2 is not required. Is that correct or not correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, that's correct. Article 2 is recommended by people but not required. So the NAIC recommends that you want to do something with market rules. SSIO recommends that. The carriers have, in fact, expressed some interest around uniform market rules that are optional, for example, open enrollment periods. So there's some observation that some uniformity of market rules between the exchange and the outside market is useful. Our Article 2 is our attempt to kind of identify those rules that make a lot of sense.
Mr. Chair,
Gazelka, follow up.
Yeah, my hope is that, you know, like many things in commerce, we find all parties combine and work together and get a direction that we can go, and then we all say, good, because everybody's in agreement. This doesn't seem like it's going down that path, and so that's why I bring that up.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, I can let you know that, and I imagine the plans have bags on their eyeballs because they've been very good about responding to requests. We've met with the carriers for at least 3 times, and we've exchanged multiple emails. I know that certainly, and not that it's all about me, but sometimes it is all about me. I lost my weekend to working on Article 2 revisions and dealing with carriers' concerns. So I think we're very cognizant of the input from the stakeholders. I should note, by the way, they're not the only stakeholders in this dialogue. The consumer advocates have expressed a number of concerns about our Article 2 provisions. In part, and I suspect you're going to hear from them today, they're a little worried that our standards may be a little too lenient. So we're trying to reach, to the extent we can, accommodation with all of the relevant stakeholders' concerns. And we hear from more and more of them every day.
Which you might not be there yet, though. Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick suggestion when you do the slides, to have some kind of number or a page number or something, because I'm going to refer to some slides, and I can't tell you where to go exactly.
Okay.
But one is listed background, and it says current state law has some differences between HMO and insurer regulations. And then there's another one under network adequacy that talks about qualified health plans that will comply with HMO standards that were set in 2014. Does this mean that what we're doing in this Article 2 is regulating everyone to become an HMO and comply by those standards?
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, so with respect to the page numbers, my bad. Sorry
okay,
about that.
Thank you.
With respect to HMO standards, in some instances, we're actually using the commerce standard that applies to insurance companies. For example, on the marketing standards, we're trying to move more towards a commerce standard. On network, we're using the HMO standard. So it depends on which section. Some of the sections, and on some of the sections, we're using the federal standard. So it's
all of the above.
All of the above. Okay.
Depending on the section.
Jensen.
So how many carriers do we have in the state of Minnesota that this would affect? How many do we have that don't currently, would it affect every?
My understanding, Senator, but I imagine the carriers may be in a better position to address this, is that with respect to marketing standards, that is a fairly common standard they comply with. With respect to network standards, my understanding is that while HMOs are the only carriers required to comply with our existing law, the insurance company networks for those HMOs, they have insurance company affiliates, they believe comfortably would comply with those HMO standards. My sense is that's roughly 80% of the marketplace.
So 20% would be not.
That's you've heard the phrase, I think, heard today, indemnity carriers. I believe there's language we've worked on to deal with the indemnity carriers' concerns, and that language should hopefully recognize their legitimate observations that a number of our sections make sense when applied to folks who actively manage providers. If you don't actually manage providers, it's hard to engage in behavior that's based on that assumption. So we've crafted language that we hope addresses that concern.
Jensen.
Another question. So who worked on these market rules? I mean, that we're looking at in Article 2. What's the group that came up with these?
I would say, Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen, apologies. A fair number of folks within the administration and outside the administration provided input and feedback. So I would submit that, for example, the DE3 reflects the very good feedback we received from the Council of Health Plans, from the Insurance Federation, from the brokers, from Delta Dental. Other stakeholders have involved the consumer advocates, the brokers,
doctors, hospitals,
the hospitals, the providers. At this point, it's probably the same stakeholder group that worked on the exchange bill.
I think we're going to be hearing from one of the folks you just mentioned in a minute.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Kisarka?
I would like to hear from them to see their response to his comment.
We're going to. They're listed, and Mr. Manny Munson Regala mentioned some of the names, so we'll hear from them in a moment. But any further question? I think we have a couple other Senator Dahl at this time.
Mr. Chair, and I do have an amendment at some point that will address some of the concerns that Senator Jensen brought up, but you let me know when you'd like to hear that. Okay. I wonder if you want to hear the testifiers first.
I think we'll hear the testifiers first, if that's all right, Senator Lurie, and
sure.
Get through that, and then we'll work on the amendments. Do we have somebody from SEIU and a consumer group reps and public testifiers? Do we have... come on up, one or all or whatever. Now, welcome to the Minnesota Senate, particularly the Commerce Committee.
Thank
State
you.
Your name and.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anna Odegaard. I'm a health policy analyst at SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. We represent 15,000 healthcare workers in hospitals, clinics, and nursing homes around the state. Thank you for the opportunity to offer testimony on Senate File 662, the Minnesota Health Plan Market Rules Bill. We support two important goals of this bill. First, the bill helps ensure that health plans sold both on the exchange and outside the exchange meet quality standards to protect all consumers from inferior health insurance products. Second, the bill should help reduce the risk of adverse selection against the exchange by providing a uniform regulatory environment inside and outside the exchange. Adverse selection, which has been mentioned a number of times today, the separation of healthier and less healthy people into different insurance arrangements, would occur if people with higher healthcare costs disproportionately enroll in health plans on the exchange because of higher quality standards and better consumer protections in those plans. While people with lower healthcare costs disproportionately enroll in plans outside the exchange because of cheaper coverage, because carriers aren't required to meet the same standards or ensure the same protections in those plans. This would drive up costs for carriers offering plans on the exchange, which would be passed on in the form of higher premiums, while allowing other carriers to cherry-pick healthy members by selling cheaper coverage that may not offer adequate protection or quality when those members actually get sick. The intent of this bill protects patients by extending quality standards and consumer protections to all health plans, and protects the exchange against adverse selection by requiring all carriers offering health insurance in Minnesota to play by the same rules, and we support that goal. In particular, we support the provision in the bill that sets higher standards for network adequacy for all health plans. The bill does this, as has been mentioned, by extending some elements of existing HMO access standards to the non-HMO commercial market, both inside and outside the exchange. This will help ensure that more Minnesotans have meaningful access to the health care they need. We also support the inclusion of rigorous quality reporting requirements for all health plans, since good data collection is foundational for promoting quality improvement in our healthcare system. We do believe, however, that the bill misses some critical opportunities to provide broader consumer protections in the health insurance market. We also have a number of unanswered questions at this point as to whether the bill achieves the goal of minimizing adverse selection against the marketplace. First, regarding Section 10 on provider network adequacy, some sections of the existing HMO access standards from Minnesota Rule 4685.1010 were added to this bill in the Delete All Amendment, while other sections were not. In particular, existing HMO standards require that carriers contract with or employ sufficient numbers of qualified providers of outpatient mental health and chemical dependency services to meet the projected needs of enrollees, including making available services that are culturally appropriate. Existing HMO standards also require carriers to have written standards and guidelines to ensure timely access to appropriate care, which basically means you can get a doctor's appointment when you really need one. These and other important provisions of the existing HMO access standards are not included in this market rules bill, and we would ask that they be considered for inclusion. Second, regarding Section 15 on limited scope dental plans, the Affordable Care Act clearly recognized the importance of making pediatric dental coverage available to all families by including that coverage in the essential health benefits. We support the provision in this bill that requires limited scope dental plans offering that coverage to offer it on a guaranteed issue basis, which means no children can be denied. However, the bill doesn't require those plans to cover pre-existing conditions. As Alyssa from the Department of Commerce mentioned earlier, federal regulation requires plans to cover pre-existing conditions related to all other services included in the essential health benefits, including the pediatric dental coverage if it is bundled with major medical. However, a family that obtains coverage for the pediatric dental essential health benefit through a limited scope dental plan may be denied coverage of denied coverage of treatment for pre-existing conditions because limited scope dental plans are exempted from most of the major market reforms, including the prohibition on exclusions of pre-existing conditions. This is clearly contrary to the intent of the major market reforms in the Affordable Care Act and also detrimental to those children most in need of pediatric dental services. We would ask that all the major market reforms that apply to the essential health benefit set apply equally to the pediatric dental services offered through a limited scope dental plan, including the requirement that pre-existing conditions be covered. Last, regarding Section 6 on the metal level mandatory offerings, this section ensures that carriers offer a range of coverage levels rather than specializing in minimal coverage products and competing on their ability to cherry-pick healthy enrollees. The Affordable Care Act applies this requirement to carriers participating in the exchange, and Section 6 of this bill would extend the requirement outside the exchange to ensure a level playing field. We support this provision, and we have concerns about the stipulation in the Delete All amendment that actually exempts carriers with less than 5% market share in Minnesota and offering products only outside the exchange from complying with this requirement until 2020. We're also concerned that this bill exempts those same carriers from the accreditation requirement until 2020. We're concerned because it will allow some carriers to specialize in offering minimal unaccredited coverage, contributing to the growing problem of underinsurance. That is, people who have insurance but still can't afford to go to the doctor because of high cost sharing or tricky loopholes in coverage. Underinsurance is a public health risk and a stress on families, and it contributes to the level of uncompensated care. Second, this exemption may raise premiums on all products offered by larger accredited carriers by segmenting the risk pool between accredited and unaccredited carriers. This will make insurance less affordable for many people and presents an adverse selection risk to the exchange by drawing healthier individuals into low-cost, unaccredited plans outside the exchange. It's important to keep in mind that carriers that have less than 5% share of the Minnesota market aren't necessarily small carriers. They merely have a small share of the market in Minnesota. We think it would be reasonable to require all carriers to comply with the same market regulations, including the metal level mandatory offerings and accreditation requirement. In fact, we believe that requiring all carriers to play by the same rules is the overarching intent of this bill.
Senator Kosoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, you represent SEIU, right?
I do.
Can you tell me how many of your employees will even participate in the exchange? What percentage?
I wouldn't want to guess and quote a number here that wasn't accurate, but I could get back to you with that information.
Well, the reason why I bring that up, Mr. Chair, is primarily it's self-funded large groups. It's state of Minnesota. It's groups that aren't even going to be in the exchange. So I was just wondering why you were here testifying today, because I don't think it's very many of your employees that are even in this.
When SEIU is on record testifying in favor of consumer protections, I think in general we are testifying on behalf of more than specifically the workers that we have organized. We are in collaboration with many advocacy groups that are concerned about consumers who will be buying health insurance on the exchange generally, and we don't necessarily restrict our concern to the workers that we've organized.
So, Mr. Chair, to the testifier, would you support those that are in SEIU potentially moving into the exchange as a direction that would be good for the SEIU?
I think that decision would be made on a company-by-company basis, depending on what other insurance were offered to them by their employer, and it would also depend, of course, many of our workers are employed by a large employer, and they wouldn't therefore be eligible for subsidies on the exchange, and so for those workers, probably not. For workers who are employed by small employers, potentially, yes.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You were talking earlier about plans that were credited or not credited.
Right.
I was under the understanding that all plans would have to meet at least the federal guidelines as far as Affordable Care Act regulations. I mean, they would still have to do that, correct?
Well, the Affordable Care Act has some reforms that are market-wide and others that apply specifically to qualified health plans on the exchange. And the Affordable Care Act has said that all plans being offered on the exchange will have to be accredited, but doesn't extend that requirement for plans offered outside the exchange. This bill would extend that requirement for plans offered outside the exchange, but includes a de minimis exception for plans that have less than 5% of the share of the Minnesota marketplace, that they wouldn't have to comply with that until 2020.
Thank you.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, this must be the best amendment in the room because it does address many of the concerns that you have brought up here today, including limited scope dental plans and some of the other concerns about mental health and substance abuse. So we'll be looking forward to hearing that amendment.
Okay, further discussion? We have... Senator Laurie, do you have any other witnesses at this time?
I didn't organize any.
Mr. Chair, Senator Laurie, it's not like you weren't busy last week.
Right. I'm just along for the ride, Mr. Chair.
I do have
it
one other question.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you...
Just a second. He's still...
Okay,
Senator Lurie, he's got you.
Early in your testimony, you talked about inferior health plan products. Can you identify some of those for me? Help me see, understand.
Well, I think one of our real
concerns. Go through the chair.
I'm not going to name names, but I think one of our real concerns. Mr. Chair,
yeah,
Senator.
I'm not a squeaker on that, but I guess I was, wasn't it? Okay, go ahead. All right, now we got everybody loosened up and confused. Go ahead.
I think one of our concerns is that in the existing HMO network access requirements, it requires that plans have written guidelines to ensure that people can get access to needed and covered benefits without unreasonable delay, which seems like a very basic level consumer protection to us. And that provision was not included in this bill. We're not sure exactly why. But we would be concerned about any products that didn't have written guidelines for ensuring that all of their covered enrollees could have access to covered medical services without unreasonable delay. That would be an example of a plan we would be concerned about.
Okay, but currently, are there currently plans like that? Are you just concerned? Your concern is that there would be?
Mr. Chair?
Sure.
Senator? Our concern is based on the expectation that there'll be a considerable influx of demand in 2014 due to subsidies on the exchange. There's been an estimate that there'll be approximately 300,000 newly insured residents in Minnesota, and there's also an expectation that the pattern of need for those newly insured residents may be different than the current marketplace due to pent-up needs since they have been uninsured. And so that current markets that may be, or current networks that may be adequate now, may not be adequate to accommodate the influx of demand in 2014.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have a list of Bob Johnson, Mike Hickey, Jeff Arch, Dominic Esposito, and Bobby Hanlon. Now, take two at a time or three at a time or however you want to do it. Welcome to the committee. Roger. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. For the record, my name is Jeff Parsh. I represent Medica. My comments today are also reflective of the members of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Before I get into Article 2, I do want to express our support for Article 1. 79 pages. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention, but it is really an important provision. For a few years now, we've been operating where state law and federal law are in conflict with each other regarding some of the change in the Affordable Care Act, and so we're appreciative of Senator Lori and the agencies working with us to try and bring that legislation forward and make sure that it works the correct way. In regards to Article 2 of the bill, the market rules provision, again, I do want to thank the agencies in particular for sitting down with us and trying to work through some of the issues. We haven't quite resolved all those issues, and so today we cannot support Article 2. I think our biggest concern with the language in applying the market rules across the entire marketplace is really a disagreement or a misunderstanding on our part in terms of the need for this. There may be some potential reasons for applying these new regulations to products outside of the exchange marketplace. One might be an existing concern that has been brought to the agencies by consumers in the marketplace as to why they might need to make some of these changes. I don't think we've heard those concerns from the agencies. Consumers are not coming to the department saying there's a lack of access to accredited health plans in the marketplace. So I don't think we're solving an existing problem. Second reason you might want to do this has been discussed quite a bit, and that is to try and prevent any differences between products sold inside and outside of the exchange and any negative consequences from that. I have two concerns with that. The first is I think the exchange bill that was passed off the Senate floor last week through the provision of an active selector model actually calls on the exchange to do its best to draw out what it considers to be the best products and only allow those inside of the exchange. And so I'd argue that the exchange bill that's being passed is already being created to distinguish the products inside the exchange from the products outside of the exchange. And so in one hand, when we pass the exchange bill, we're sort of arguing for a difference so that the exchange can hold itself up as different and unique. But now with the market rules bill, we're trying to argue that that's a concern if there's differences, and so we need to make sure that everyone is operating under the same rules. And I just think to some extent those are in conflict with each other. The exchange legislation stipulates that if you don't pass this market rules bill, that the exchange board would then have the authority to set their own QHP criteria moving forward, which in my mind is really the same as the provision that allows them to create their selection criteria. Either way, it's the board wants the ability to set some standards that are higher than the marketplace for products sold. So I just don't know why we're trying to do both things. There's been a lot of conversation about adverse selection and the need to do some of these provisions to prevent adverse selection in the marketplace. As a couple people noted, adverse selection is an area of concern where one risk pool is healthier than another risk pool, and therefore people choose based on the prices that are created by the difference in the health of those risk pools. The exchange is not a risk pool. It's not a purchasing pool. The example that Mr. Munson-Regala gave of purchasing pools failing because people would buy cheaper products outside doesn't apply in the same manner with the exchange because the exchange doesn't buy anything. Insurance carriers, whether they're inside or outside the exchange, remain the ones that hold the risk. So when we talk about concerns about adverse selection, a couple people correctly noted the concern is adverse selection from one carrier to another, concerning that Medicare would be adversely selected against from Blue Cross or Health Partners or Federated or the others. I appreciate that people are concerned about us, but quite frankly, we don't share those concerns in the absence of this market rules bill. A couple reasons for that has been noted. Our risk is spread inside and outside of the exchange. So the products we sell inside won't be segregated from the products we as a carrier are sold outside. And risk adjustment does apply. As Senator Lori noted, it's not a perfect mechanism. You can't make risk adjustment perfect, but it is a mechanism to help if there was a carrier only operating outside trying to only attract healthy people. Risk adjustment does help that. Can't make risk adjustment perfect. You also cannot make a set of market rules perfect whereby you don't have a carrier that is trying to meet a niche market in order to provide them cheaper insurance that is of better value to them. And I would argue in some ways you don't want to prevent that from happening. I think there is always a need for affordable products for consumers who affordability is a top need, and they may not have the robust health care needs, at least today, that others do. You need those people in the risk pool, in the over global all risk pool with me or with another carrier so that they can be risk adjusted. That is one of the components of the Affordable Care Act, to get everybody in, and a number of those people are still going to want and desire narrow, flexible, leaner, less expensive products. I think by applying some of these rules and provisions, we're limiting the ability of the marketplace outside of the exchange to do that, and I think that's a concern. The other reason I think you would want to adopt some of the provisions in this bill is if you're trying to lessen some of the differences between how HMOs and insurance products are regulated, apply a common standard for consumers to understand for these regulations. And I think that is a worthy goal. We're engaged with the agencies trying to develop what that floor is so it's easier to understand for consumers. Our concern is the language and the provisions in the bill currently go beyond that. And until we can work out those differences and resolve them with the agencies, we cannot support Article 2. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kosoko.
Thank you, Mr. Metzen. To the testifier, I just want clarification of something, the active purchaser section. We had a debate on that last Thursday. It was my understanding that at the federal level, they're not automatically deselecting, for a lack of a better term, a carrier. Is that true or not? I want clarification on that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, for states that utilize the federally facilitated exchange, carriers that meet the qualified health plan criteria are allowed onto the exchange. So if you meet the criteria, you're in.
Senator Mr. Bob Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. I would be here today, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the diminutive market share carriers, if was the reference to a previous witness. So, and we're in a fast-moving track here, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and I appreciate the kind of the input in the conversations with the Health Department and the Commerce Department and Senator Lori. We've had a chance to meet, and I'm kind of adjusting here as I go, given and there's some more amendments coming to the committee here. I think, Mr. Chairman and committee members, it's important to say a couple things. And it's been commented on that, A, the ACA is bringing a number of reforms that is applicable to everybody selling insurance in Minnesota, obviously not just the exchange, and if that's going to be 10 to 30% of Minnesotans or 70%, let's say it's 30 that are not in the exchange. But all of those ACA reforms, the guarantee issue and renewability and the essential health benefits and these metal level plans and the premium rate variations. So we know that on January 1, 2014, we can't rate based on health status. So again, all of these reforms are applicable to everybody inside and outside of the exchange. And it's important to comment on that because it does come down to the question about outside of the exchange, you know, what rules should be applicable there. And I think we've had some strong feelings on that because we, from our perspective, we want to preserve the markets there, the companies and the individuals that are buying in those markets, and we don't want those to be jeopardized. So we state that pretty clearly. And we've had good conversations, again, with the chief author and the agencies on that. I think from our industry's perspective, the A3, as it's before you, in part deals with those concerns. there's this 5% market rule. There are some sections in there that I believe are going to be addressed in an upcoming amendment that pose problems. And these are the kinds of problems. If you're a licensed insurer, you're selling products today and you don't own or rent a network of providers. We have companies like that. Subjecting them to HMO-type regulations, they can't comply with that. They simply don't have networks that they, in terms of the accreditation and these quality assurance and the management, they can't do that. And so if you subject them to the requirements that they can't do, then they can't sell in the state. And there's a recognition of that. And so I just state that on the record because it's important. So I think, Mr. Chairman and committee members, maybe I'll reserve time if there's some amendments additionally to comment on. But I would want to comment on one specific issue that's still in the A3, and it is going to need to be addressed. And there is a requirement that all plans, individual and group carriers outside of the exchange, have to sell. They're called child-only health plans. And if you're a group carrier in Minnesota today, you only sell group. You don't have on file individual forms and rates. You can't sell a child-only plan. And I know there's been an acknowledgement by both agencies that that's an issue. And so there's an example of a requirement outside of the exchange that a carrier in that situation would not be able to comply with, and we don't think that's a good grounds to take a carrier out of the market. So, Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'll stop at that because I know there are others that want to testify and maybe reserve if there's amendments coming up to come back up on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Senator Lord.
Mr. Chair, maybe I could just take 1 second and respond to a couple of these directly and say that honestly, innovation is not going to be stifled by these rules unless what we're talking about is innovation in limiting networks to avoid cost and to, again, push the high-risk folks elsewhere, or innovation in terms of marketing and in how we are fair to consumers and how we give them information and market our products. And so innovation, these are really the rules that are in here that we're trying to work on, and that it's not really so much and even an inside or outside the exchange that we're trying to address here as carrier versus carrier in terms of the risks of adverse selection. We're really trying to create a market both inside and outside the exchange where the competition is around quality and value for the consumer rather than around risk segmentation. And because risk adjustment is in its infancy and so imperfect, the market, both inside and outside, it is a natural piece of the free market to compete on those things that are of value. And risk is of value. Pushing risk away from you and toward others is of great value, whether that be inside and outside or carrier versus carrier or plan versus plan. So it's not really an inside or outside the exchange that we're trying to promote here, but a level playing field market-wide.
Senator Pratt, directly to that point. Otherwise, I know we do have a few more testifiers. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope it's to that point. Senator Lurie, by the very setup of the healthcare exchange with 700,000 already on public programs of the million to 1.3 million that we expect to be on in the exchange, by definition, if you look at socioeconomic and other factors, is already going to be a higher risk pool. And it seems to, I guess my question is, do you view the healthcare exchange in direct competition with the non-exchange policies?
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I don't view the exchange as in direct competition with the outside the exchange. I believe that there can be a competitive market operating both inside and outside the exchange, and that's what we're really trying to bring about. And these are going to be much longer conversations, I feel that we can get to the right balance.
Follow up?
Short, please. So I guess my question is really at a fairly basic level, Senator Lurie, and maybe Mr. Johnson or Mr. Barsh can weigh in. It seems to me that we are, based on adverse selection, we are concerned that there are folks that would normally go into the exchange that are choosing not to. Putting the two in competition
And my interpretation of this seems to be that we're trying to force rules on the outside market to give the exchange a leg up in that competition. And I'm trying to resolve that fact.
Senator Laurie?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I mean, you characterize it as a fact. I mean, I don't think it is a fact. I think we are really trying to foster that competition market-wide, inside or outside, and protect against the value of competing on risk segmentation rather than on quality and value, be your product inside or outside the exchange. And so that's what we're really trying to get at. And we're talking about network adequacy requirements, accreditation, marketing standards that apply market-wide to just level the playing field and make sure that folks are. And on the outside of the exchange, with some of the amendments that we've worked on with Bob Johnson and other folks from the indemnity and niche carriers, I mean, I think that we're going to be able to have a place for them to protect their niche markets that they've developed over the years and be able to still operate largely outside the exchange. I don't believe there's a big desire to try to get inside the exchange from the conversations that I've had, but that there's still a viable place to be outside the exchange and be competitive. And I think that doesn't cut against the broader trends that we're trying to foster.
Mr. Johnson, did you have just something? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I know we have Mr. Hickey, Mr. Spassetto, Mr. Hamlin. Dominic, are you out there? Go ahead, Mike.
Mr. Chairman, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, and we've had a chance to visit with you on the exchange bill and work with Senator Laurie on this prior. A lot of our members, I think, are going to be especially affected by the second bill. As I followed the debate on the first exchange bill, we felt that a lot of our members probably aren't going to end up in the exchange. Maybe some of their employees may walk away from their group coverage and go pursue other better coverage or perceived better coverage in the exchange. But we're real concerned about everybody who's not going to be in the exchange in this market that's left over. I haven't really had a chance to get my arms around this bill. Maybe you haven't either, and I guess massive changes are coming. So maybe we'll all be saying that when we walk out of the hearing today. But we're really concerned about doing too much too quick. There's going to be dramatic changes imposed on the insurance market through the ACA. Some people are going to get dramatic increases. Some people in the group market will benefit. Some people in the individual market are going to get increases that are probably so large they may drop their coverage. Others may get some relief from a pre-existing condition clause they've suffered with. But there's going to be dramatic changes, so don't be surprised if your phones are ringing off the hook some days and people inappropriately calling you, blaming you for all the things that are occurring in the ACA when they should be calling their two U.S. senators and their member of Congress. But options are going to diminish. Out-of-copay and restrictions on out-of-pocket and copay and deductibles are going to go down. I think HSAs are going to be a lot less effective. People who have HSAs and feel they've gotten about the best deal they can and are comfortable with that, that's not the plan everybody wants. But for some people, they're happy to have a very high deductible, get into the HSA arrangement. They're going to find that to be less effective. I wouldn't be surprised if some of them see some pretty big premium increases due to the restrictions on out-of-pocket and deductibles and copays. So there's so much going on here that I just urge you to proceed slowly on this. Our biggest concern is we don't want to lose competition in this outer market where the vast majority of the NFIB members are, of our 13,000 members. We already have a very integrated market, and we would really urge you to be cautious about passing a second bill this year that's not necessary, that might drive a lot of people out of this market, dissuade them from staying here, because it may look like very little when you look at it on a graph, but that company that has 2%, 1%, 0.5%, they are insuring people in niche plans and areas across the state that are important to those people who are in those plans. And we're just concerned about competition and losing it and losing choice. So I just wanted to share that with you, and thanks for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. And I think most of us that have been here for any length of time know that folks back home think we make six figures and live in D.C. already. So, Mr. Spassetto.
Okay, you're right.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dominic Spazzetto. I'm here today representing the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors in Minnesota, as well as the Minnesota Independent Insurance Agents, which are associations of agents and brokers who sell health insurance products throughout the state. I'm going to start off by going where no one has actually gone before and actually talk a little bit about Article 1. I have a concern about Article 1, which I know is federal law, but it relates to the grandfather provision in the law. And basically, when the law was passed, the president said, if you're happy with the health insurance you have, now you can keep it. And I think the grandfather provision in here kind of is an attempt to put that in statute. And basically, as I read it, what it says is if you had a health insurance plan, I'm particularly thinking about group plans, in effect March 23rd of 2010, and you maintain the status of that plan, you are grandfathered in, and the changes that are in the Affordable Care Act, the market changes, will not apply to you, and you can continue to have your policy. The question I raise is, what does maintain that status actually mean? We have a very competitive marketplace in Minnesota, and it's not surprising that you'll find out that someone between 2010, 11, and 12, or maybe even the beginning of this year, may have changed their carriers because they got a better price quote. If you have the same exact plan, but you go to a different carrier, does that mean you've maintained that status? I don't know. Second point, what if you, based on legislation that this legislature has passed related to coverage for dependents or the coverage for preventive services, changed your policy to comply with the law? Does that mean that you've maintained that status of the plan, or is that a substantial change which means you did not maintain that status and would not be grandfathered? I don't know how we deal with this. I assume there'll be direction coming from the departments on an explanation of what that means, but the agent and broker communities raise concerns because they're going to go out and try and explain this to people, whether or not they need to change their group insurance plan. So I think that would be something we can work on, and it's not a criticism of the law. It is the federal law. It would just be helpful to get greater guidance. As it relates to this whole discussion about adverse selection and advantages and disadvantages, again, I may try a different tact. I actually think the health insurance exchange itself will have advantages that aren't available to those in the private market, the largest being the public subsidies or the tax credits that will be available. You can only get those if you purchase insurance through the health insurance exchange. And agents and brokers are going to be out there screening people not based on their health status but based on their income, and suggesting to them that they will get subsidies and hopefully buy a product through the exchange. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's cheaper for you. Second of all, I think there's an opportunity for small employers to have advantages through the exchange. They will be able to go to a defined contribution plan that would allow their individual employees to select their own health insurance through different carriers. We don't have that ability in the private market. You can do a defined contribution plan, but if you do it all within that same carrier. And so that's another substantial difference, I think, between the exchange and the outside market. So my concern and the concerns of the agents and brokers is that we don't set up a system that is going to restrict the activities to a great extent of the private market and add cost to the system. Keep in mind, the insurance exchange, by the most optimistic projections, will have 1.3 million enrollees. What about the other 4 million in the state? They're going to be back in our private market, and we want to make sure that that's a strong, competitive, and fair market. And I would encourage you to, again, go slow on this. We're basing a lot of things, a lot of projections on what we think might happen. And I'm here to tell you, I don't think we know what's going to happen once this law becomes effective and how the industry responds. So I would encourage your caution. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right.
Thank you. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Esposito, I'm just curious in a general overall way, the groups that you represent, people that you represent, do they ever get together to try to figure out how to reduce premiums or how to reduce health care costs without reducing, without increasing copays and deductibles? Because it seems like in the last many years, and I was involved in the medical field some years ago now, double-digit increases every year, less and less services every year. And they folks don't seem to offer any answers, and yet you're, you know, criticizing the one effort we have here to try to make health care affordable for people. But without, once again, without coming forward with other offers, other ideas, how can you become more competitive? How can you, without giving people next to nothing for health insurance, how can your organizations do that? I haven't heard that forever in any of the years that I've either been in public policy or when I was worked in the medical field. So I really think folks that are keep protesting this bill really have to come forward and get together with their organizations and decide, what are you going to do? Because we cannot sustain this healthcare system in this country very much longer at all. And I disagree that health savings accounts are an answer for anybody, because people just can't get medical care with those health savings accounts or with the high deductibles or with the high co-pays. So all we're doing is eliminating people in the current medical field in this country now, and insurance field. All we're doing is continuing to eliminate people from being able to have health care coverage, even basic health care coverage. So that, I'm sorry to rant on and on, but boy, I sure would like to hear some ideas from your industries about that. Then, Senator Lurie, I have a quick question for you on
Let's
the mental
pause,
health.
Pause, Senator Goodwin.
Oh.
There was a first question there. Mr. Sposato, yeah. I think your
you
folks
your
tend
response?
To end right. up in the middle of that. They're not providing the plan or providing the health care. They're just trying to connect consumers to it. But if you have some thoughts.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, I think the chairman makes the point that I would make. We would love to come back to our policyholders with cheaper policies. You know, we deliver that message of the 10, the 12, the 15% increase. And we're not happy about that. It's not something that we as agents can control. It's medical cost, it's trends, it's inflation, it's whatever the pricing of the carriers that deliver the policies to us to sell control. That said, I agree with you. There is a change in the marketplace of shifting more and more cost onto the individual enrollees through higher deductibles and higher co-payments. That's a national trend. It's happening everywhere. I don't know what we can do to stop it. Maybe the exchange will be the vehicle that does that. And I want to be clear, you know, we're not opposing the exchange. We had our opportunities to work with the center on that, and we're somewhat pleased with the results. And with some fine-tuning, I think the exchange will be a very good vehicle for insurance agents and brokers. My only concern is that we don't go too far too fast, because we just don't know. We're afraid. We're afraid for our jobs. We're afraid for our policyholders.
And Senator Goodwin, I'll take your question for Senator Lurie. And we, members, we still have two more testifiers, and I'm aware of several amendments, and we have about a half hour. So,
okay, I'll make it quick. Mr. Chair, thank you. And Senator Lurie, I have a concern about the section on mental health coverage, and that is that they have to provide coverage that's within 30 miles or 30 minutes of wherever, I suppose, wherever the person is located or whatever. That's pretty tough, as you well know, in the rural areas, and they're allowed to get a waiver if they can. And my understanding is that the waivers are already easy to get for whatever mental health coverage there is. So I'm wondering if, and this isn't now, I don't have any amendments, but just if some way we could tighten up that language a little bit and at least say what have the people that are getting waivers say what they did to try to make sure that that coverage was available, or put more minutes on there that it has to be within an hour or 60 minutes or something that might work a little better in the rural areas, in those areas outside of the metro where you don't have that access within that short of period.
Senator Lurie.
Senator Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, your point is very well taken. The market rules segment are largely drawn from the HMO standards that are in law today for network adequacy. And, you know, there certainly are limitations in those. I'll be the first to admit that. To expand it broadly would have, you know, some real cost implications. We're trying to get to the right balance. It is a conversation that I take very, very seriously, and we will. There is a piece of an amendment that will be coming up that does reference mental health services directly, but it doesn't do everything that I'm sure you and I would both like to see happen eventually.
Thank you.
Great. Mr. Hanlon, if you want to start, and then I know, is it Mr. Lally wants to testify as well, so if you want to switch spots with Dominic. Go ahead, Mr. Hanlon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Bob Hanlon, as we just said, and I own an independent insurance agency here in the Twin Cities, and I employ 35 people. in that business, who assists roughly 200 small and medium-sized employers, in addition to many individual policyholders who purchase health care through an individual policy. I've been in the business for 29 years, so it's a long time. I've seen a lot of changes and so forth, and I always knew this day was going to come for one reason. It's because health care has always been very expensive, and it's always been very confusing, and it's getting worse on both fronts. For the past 2 years, I was very fortunate to be a member of the Governor's Health Insurance Exchange Task Force, representing the agent's Coalition for Health Care Reform. One of those organizations is who Dominic represents, who is up here. We have 54,000 agents, roughly, and who service people out there. I believe roughly 50-some percent of everybody in Minnesota who actually purchases health care actually did it through an agent, or an agent was involved in somehow. So one of the things that we are dear to our hearts is, how do we get affordable health care for our people? Matter of fact, an agent doesn't get paid unless they can find affordable care for their people. So obviously, it's a very important thing to us. One of the things, as when we were on the exchange, I thought it was very nice, or I thought it was an honor for me to be on there, because I was able to put my 29 years of history into changing, I think, the biggest change that we've ever done in healthcare, besides MinCare back when we did it in the early 90s. One of the things when we did that, we made some major changes where we lost a lot of carriers. We used to have, when I was young selling insurance, we used to have over 11 insurance companies that I could actually market today. And as soon as the law was changed, we went down to 4 ultimately, and now it's about 5. But it was, there's really not that many carriers. So anyway, I think we do have to be very careful in any of the changes that we make. When I was on the exchange, one of the principles that we talked about, we actually came up, the first 6 months of sitting on the exchange, we came up with principles, guiding principles, on what should drive us as we create the exchange. One of those principles was, we should not upset what's already working. And that's what we talked about, adverse selection. We've talked about, should we change the outside market? And everybody agreed. Minnesota has great health insurance. We all know it's expensive. Everywhere it's expensive. But when you look at it and you ask yourselves, anytime you get to go to a doctor, any doctor you want to, anytime you want to, for any reason you want to, how can you control that cost? It's very tough. But that's the only commodity or the service you'll ever buy that you get to do that. And health insurance has to cover that. So when we look at it, it's not easy to try to figure out the solution to fixing healthcare problem. So when I got on the exchange, I looked at it. I also have a division that actually we do enrollments for corporations. And what that basically says is, that when we set up a policy for corporations, we actually do the enrolling and the communicating to their people at home. We're the call center. We educate them on what the benefits are. We enroll them. We answer their questions. When they have problems with the claim, we answer that. When they're having babies, when they're getting married and divorces, we handle all that. When they finally leave the company, we handle that transition as well. So those are the kind of things, and I understand we work on over almost 40,000 people a year working with that. So we understand quite a bit what people are going through and the headaches. One of my concerns here as well is we need products. So if we come under the basis that we have to fix and go forward, not tear down and go forward and backward at the same time, is when we need something that's outside of this market. Because if we're going to have a small group of people, was it 7 people, I think it was, that was going to now make all these decisions for us in the future? Those 7 people are going to replace all those smart people who are paid a lot of money at the carriers, who are trying to figure out how they can compete better against the other carrier. So all of a sudden now these 7 people are going to have all these answers that in 29 years that we couldn't come up with yet, because we still have the same problem, even under the exchange. You're going to have people can go to any doctor they want to, anytime they want to, for any reason they want to. Unless someday as an exchange you say, from now on, you can't do that. You can't go when you're 80 years old and have that hip replacement. Or when you're young and when you were the first, whatever you have going, somebody's going to make that decision that you can't go. Until you do that, you have a free open market system. You're going to have a cost that's very hard to corral. And we're also concerned with carriers spending more administration. So the more you legislate, the more they have to administer. So one thing that a carrier has the option to include themselves or not include themselves, probably most will, but at least on the outside of the market, if they have to try to do both of them, administer both ways, that's going to be, I believe, more administration, and so does my industry. One of the other things is when we were working with this, the agents did not sign on that we would change the outside market, because we honestly believe if you tie up the outside market, you're going to stifle ingenuity. I just see it happening, and I know that we have the best of intentions throughout this whole thing, but this is a huge animal. I mean, you're trying to change a whole industry. You're trying to change healthcare for your friends and your family and your neighbors, and how do we have all the answers? Well, we don't. None of us do. So let's move into this. We've got the ACA. There's great portions of that. Let's go with that, and let's try to keep the outside market at least have an ingenuity being created, and maybe some of that ingenuity that's being created, if we leave it open, will actually foster some of the in-network or the inside of the exchange that they actually didn't think of on their own. That is my discussion, so thank you. I'd be happy to take any questions otherwise.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hanlon. Mr. Lally, is it Lally or Lally?
Lally.
Lally. Thank you, Mr. Lally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Joe Lally. I'm a vice president at Delta Dental. Delta Dental has 4.2 million members for whom we process dental claims, and a customer service staff up on the Iron Range that answers more than 5,000 calls a day. We wanted to express our thanks to Senator Lurie for his work with us on the discrete portions that do apply to dental on both the what I call the first bill and this, the second bill. We're a little concerned about the economic maxim that cost and price are related. And as more costs come on to carriers for products that we administer, those costs will be reflected in price. And so we want to be true to our nonprofit mission, which is to provide the broadest amount of coverage in the most economical way to the most number of Minnesotans. Dental is included and excluded from healthcare reform. As I think was mentioned earlier, dental is specifically excluded from the market reforms in the ACA. Pediatric dental is part of the essential benefit set, so it would appear to be included, but CMS has indicated that while it's required to be offered, it's not required to be purchased. So the individual mandate aspect of the ACA doesn't apply to even the pediatric portion of dental. Our concern is that this bill would apply to markets that aren't even included in the exchange, namely adults, probably adults, but most specifically childless adults. So if you're a small employer going through the shop portion of the exchange to make a purchase, and you've got employees that have kids and employees that are single, the employees that are single would not be able to have dental coverage through the exchange. They'd have to go outside the exchange. And as a result, those employers would have a patchwork of benefits, having to go different methods to buy different products for different kinds of coverage. Our concern specifically on the bill is in what was section or subdivision 0.06 on the metal levels. Federal rules that came out on February 20th indicate for dental, there would be, for pediatric dental, there'd be two metal levels. One at a actuarial value of 85% and one at 70%. So it's a little bit different than what's in the bill. The other portion of the bill, subdivision 0.11, I think it is. Or not subdivision. It's section 0.11. That's what I have in my notes. The section on balanced billing. Seems like it should apply to dental, but it doesn't. It's not listed in the subdivisions that would apply to limited dental plans. So our other concern is about an amendment, Mr. Chair, that we understand will be offered, that we got it this afternoon at 12:15. And I don't know if you want me to speak to the concerns about the amendment before it's offered or speak generally.
Why don't we hear about the amendment, then you can speak.
All right. Thank you.
In favor of
it. All right. So I guess we just ask the committee's indulgence to recognize that dental is different. It's different, very different than medical coverage. It's not intended to be, or it's a product that's intended to be used. It's largely preventive. It's more of a prepaid benefit than it is the concept of traditional insurance. And that concept keeps prices low.
Okay, I think we've got 20 minutes to go or so. I think we've heard a lot of discussion. Senator Dahl, did you have a...
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A7 amendment.
I have a good decision, too.
I think you can, usually we pass it out right away, but in the
because of the timing, I think you can start explaining it.
And as I mentioned, this must be a pretty good amendment because a lot of the issues that have been brought up here are in this amendment. And Senator Lurie is good with what's in here, my understanding. So I'll just kind of walk you through this very quickly. And I'm not the expert, but I can maybe give you some guidance, and Senator Lurie and I maybe could give some clarification. So 1-3 there is just a technical piece, but the next section, 1-4, on the amendment to 1-8, to clarifies that the statute of 62K, which is the Minnesota Health Plan market, does not apply to grandfathered plans. There's a technical piece in 1-9. We have a definition here, which will be addressed later, about the limited scope dental plan. And again, that explained later in this amendment. A technical piece, 119 to 124. The next section here, 125, the bottom of the page, clarifies that the marketing standards section clarifies that a little bit better for us, and then adds an evidence of coverage requirement. Next page on the amendment, there's a parcel exemption from accreditation there in 2-4 to 2-7. We also had a question about geographic accessibility. There's a little exemption here that goes from 2-9 to 2-20. There's also that sentence on 2-21 that does add providers that specialize in mental health and substance abuse services. Some other technical changes here. 228 to the rest of the page, there's a quality assurance exemption piece. And then the next page, a waiver for the quality assurance section of Article 2. Technical changes after that. And then here is the addition of the limited scope dental plans. It's a new subdivision, A, B, and C, which was a concern earlier. So that's about it. If I didn't already, I'll move that amendment.
Before that, I think we'll...
I think that'd be a friendly amendment. I would appreciate member support.
Okay, we're going to quickly appear quickly. There's a proponent or opponents of this amendment in about 3-4 minutes. Let's hear from okay. Did you want to speak...
Mr. Chair,
Manny
Munson Regala from the Department of Health. This amendment reflects conversations we've had with the council and with some of the indemnity carriers, specifically Federated Insurance. It does not capture all of the technical changes that the council has offered, and that is our apologies for that, but we tried to capture as much as we could. The bulk of the amendment is intended to deal with the very real concern that Federated articulated that a number of our provisions were intended to do or had an underlying assumption that they were actively managing a network. Federated's business model is they rent the network. In talking to them, we wanted to see if they could accept a structure where the person who rented them the network would be responsible for complying with network adequacy.
How did they answer that when you talked to them?
They said that would be acceptable to them. To be sure that we had our knitting all in order, we then contacted the company that rents them their network to see would they be willing to take on that liability for ensuring compliance with network adequacy standards.
Senator Rory, you like this amendment?
This would be a friendly amendment again, yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lally, did you look at this? Do you have a concern?
Yes.
Quickly.
Mr. Chair, Joe Lally with Delta Dental. Our concern is in Subdivision 8, really it's a question. The definition that's been used in all the discussions and the definition on what qualifies as pediatric is up to age 19. The amendment refers to age 21, and so we're uncertain whether it's an expansion of the definition of pediatric. On the Section 14, limited scope dental plans. There's an observation that we earn an extra regulator in this. Right now, Delta Dental's regulator is the Department of Commerce. In Subdivision A under Section 14. Subdivision A, we report to the Department of Commerce, and Subdivision B, we report to the Department of Health. It's additional administration, additional relationships, and you know, additional work. But we don't object to the amendment from the 30 miles to the 60 miles for the primary dental services.
Currently, so you've got the age in section subdivision 8, and you've got some kind of a section 14. Who they report to? Is that the commissioners? Commerce, and state your two objections right away, and then I'll have Senator Lori address them.
All right. The concern is that our underwriting and product planning that's been going on to date changes if the age changes from 19 to 21.
Okay. What's the rationale on that? Is that what we want to do, Senator Lori? Is there any? Is that all right?
I'm going to have the Department of Commerce, who's been working on this, answer that.
Once again, Mr. Chair and members, my name is Alyssa Vodden-Rudin with the Department of Commerce, and I guess my comment would be that the intent with this change was that it would be to technically conform with the law, so to whatever extent this does not align with the ACA, we will take a look at that.
If that's the case, so what's...
That's fine. We'll just continue to have conversations.
So that'll remain at the 21. What's Section 14? You had an objection.
Section 14... these are just they're HMO standards that don't currently apply to us because we're not an HMO. The travel time has been amended, or the distance, I guess, for the network access has been amended from 30 miles in the original bill to 60 miles here.
Okay, you don't have a problem with that.
With 60 miles, we don't have a problem with it, Mr. Chair. But there'll be other carriers that don't have the same size network that we do that may be blocked out of whole counties because they don't have a sufficient network.
So, Mr. Chair, we'll keep working on and talking with some of this. I mean, part of this is the agreement between the Department of Commerce and the Department of Health, that the Department of Health would be the one responsible for network adequacy requirements. If we were to change and make the Department of Commerce in charge of this, it's something that they're not used to doing, and it would be awkward, so we will continue
the
dialogue.
So in the past, it was a Commissioner of Commerce, and now it's a Commissioner
of Health? No, the Commissioner of Commerce has never been doing the enforcement of the network adequacy requirements, and the time and distance is a network adequacy, and that's always been under the Department of Health. And so we'll keep working on it, but I hope it wouldn't prevent members from supporting the A7 amendment.
I think we're pretty close. Senator Kosalka on the A7.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that I can support the amendment. However, my hope is that we take some more serious action on Article 2, but the way it is right now, I think it's okay.
Further discussion on
A7.
The Dahl Amendment. Further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. No.
Just voted. I'm sorry.
Did you vote?
I just voted. I'm sorry.
I would guess that about 90% of the senators that aren't on the committee that sit there probably say aye once more.
Mr. Chair, I think there's a hidden rule that takes the whole bill down. Right. Isn't that right?
Oh. Wow. Could you recite the
immediate void?
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer an amendment A5.
You can A5 amendment has been offered by Senator Jensen. You can start explaining.
Sure. This moves to amend and the delete everything amendment. On page 79, it would delete Article 2 and insert the language that you should be currently receiving. What it does is it would put into place a market rules working group to take a look at the market rules in Article 2. The working group would expire June 30th, 2014. It would allow us to take a look at everything in Article 2 and make sure that we're taking the time needed. We are changing the insurance industry with the Affordable Care Act. That's Article 1. But we're going above that with Article 2. And I do not believe that we've taken enough time to make sure we're doing what's in the best interest of all consumers, whether you're inside or outside the marketplace.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, this is the first I've seen the A5 amendment. I mean, just running through it real quick. I mean, I hope that the significant work that's being done with all of the stakeholder groups is respected by this committee and allowed to continue for a period without falling back on a working group. I do understand that at times in the legislature, when things get too much to accommodate, we sometimes fall back on establishing a working group. I think that the importance of establishing, you know, a level playing field both inside and outside the exchange to try to address adverse selection issues, carrier to carrier, plan to plan, inside and outside. That this is a valuable conversation that I hope would be allowed to continue a little bit during this legislative session beyond this committee. If we were to switch to a stakeholder work group process right now, I think that we wouldn't be doing a real service to this important conversation. This was discussed in depth in the Health Insurance Exchange Task Force and its various subcommittees. It was adopted by the Insurance Exchange Task Force as a very strong recommendation a couple of times to adopt same rules inside and outside. And I think that, you know, again, at the end of the day, we may wind up not being able to accomplish this. And that's a question that I leave open at this point. But I would hope that we wouldn't answer it today at this very first stop of this bill by defaulting to a work group. You know, if I just go back to some of the things I've already said, you know, cost shifting, risk avoidance, narrow networks, these are very easy ways for carriers to lower premiums. And that's, you know, that's accepted. It's understood. But really, we're trying to provide incentives to the marketplace to really be innovative on other measures and truly reduce costs. Maybe it's care management. Maybe it's payment reforms. But we're looking for those true value measures and trying to encourage competition based on value and quality rather than on these cost shifting and risk avoidance measurements. And I think that I would at this stage oppose the A5 amendment and hope that members would allow for this broader stakeholder engagement process to continue at least for a period and see if we can't get much broader participation. We've already made significant progress toward alleviating a lot of the concerns of a lot of the members. We've been working with the large carriers, the small indemnity carriers. The hospitals have the Minnesota Hospital Association. I don't have a copy of it, but I believe it was handed out to the members. They're very supportive of this work. They participated on this. I know the doctors, the MMA is very interested in keeping this conversation alive, and I think it is of value, and so would respectfully hope that we could keep that going and not adopt the A5 amendment at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before this amendment, it was my desire to have an amendment to delete Article 2 or to put a two-year enactment on Article 2. But, you know, this would be something that if adopted, I could support the bill. You know, I think many, many of our testifiers all talked about go slow, take some time, look at this. We have another huge bill that we just adopted. The ACA is coming into play. All of these stakeholders need to give input, and in the end, I think we'll have a better program than what we have right now. I mean, this is a fragile is the right term, market, but it is. Everything we do will have an impact, and primarily, I would say, on rates and who participates. And so I'm going to support this particular amendment. I think it's a good step for compromise.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am going to support the A5 amendment. Senator Lurie, I don't think this stops the conversation at all from happening. I think it takes it, and to Senator Gazelka's point and many of the testifiers, slows it down to make sure that we get the rules right. We talked a lot during the health exchange debate that a lot of the detail was in the market rules, and here they are. And I think we need to make sure that all the stakeholders are in place. We talked about the importance of an advisory board to the or an advisory commission to the board, and I think this becomes the advisory commission to the legislature to make sure that we have a bill that not only protects the exchange but also protects the market in whole.
Roll call on this, Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask for roll call. So.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment to this is that I will support this amendment. I think Senator Jensen brings a good point to the table with this amendment. I understand when we had the Affordable Care Act that we voted on last Thursday, we were under the gun time-wise. We're not under the gun time-wise here. We can take the time and make sure we do this right. It's going to be much easier to do it right the first time than it is to pass the bill and then start figuring out what we're going to do and how we're going to correct some of the errors. So let's do it right, get all the parties involved, come up with a bill that we can make Minnesota proud of.
Yeah. Further discussion? We're voting on the A5 Jensen Amendment. Secretary, take the roll.
Metzen.
Yes.
Brown.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Dahl.
No.
Dames.
Yes.
Gazelka.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Housley.
Yes.
Latz.
No.
Pratt.
Yes.
Reiner.
Pass.
Six in favor. There we had six.
Did I not? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Jensen. Yes.
Seven.
Okay.
We had seven in favor and four against. The amendment is adopted. Senator Pratt, did you have an amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer the 813 amendment. And I'm going to ask Mr. Stang to help me modify this in light of Senator Jensen's amendment. May I just start real quick, Mr. Chair, while the amendment's being passed out? Mr. Chair, as we went through the healthcare exchange discussion. We had a conversation about competition, which we were told would be covered in the market rules. All this does is simply say that any health care plan that qualifies through the board rules shall be included within the exchange.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, my question would be, you just voted to take Article 2 out of the bill and make it a study, and now you're adding to Article 2?
No, we were going to add this into Article 1. Isn't that correct?
This is Article 2, Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Chairman, members, yes, this needs to be recoded to go in Article 1, given the result of the A5 amendment. The amendment would have to be changed as follows. Line 1.3, it should say page 84 after line 23, insert, and it would be section 97, and it should be coded in 62Q.83. That would have the effect of placing it in Article 1 in a way that I think works.
I think we can.
Mr. Chair, we've spent 12 hours debating Senate File 1 on the floor of the Minnesota Senate Thursday of last week, had many conversations about this. for the same reason stated, I would oppose the A13 amendment.
Okay, we're going to allow Senator Pratt to change it to Article 1, then we're going to vote on it. Senator Kosoko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I can make one comment, on the Senate floor, when we did debate this section, I believe, Senator Lori, you said that federal exchanges had the ability to exclude somebody if they met all the requirements, but I forget the testifier, but confirm that that's not the case, that if they meet all the requirements, they are in. And perhaps that was the one straw that would put people over.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, I'm not certain of who the testifier referring to is, but the feds do have the ability to select.
Mr. Chair, I believe it was Jeff somebody.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Senator Gazelka, in year one, the feds do not have the active selector, but in beginning in year two, the feds do have active selector powers within the exchange, and they're actually not even bounded in the way that we've added the certainty around how the selector process would work in the state of Minnesota under the rules established in Senate File 1.
Kosoko, then we're going to vote.
Mr. Chair, that if the testifier could confirm what he just said, I'd like to have that for the record.
Farge. The shortened version. Mr. Birch.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I apologize. I just stepped out to the restroom and walked back in, so I'm not.
So you might agree with Senator Lori.
Mr. Chair, we want clarification on the active purchaser. The federal guidelines do not require it. Senator Lori said they do after 1 year, I believe, but I would like your perspective on that. What does the ACA require?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as I stated before, it's my understanding that if a health carrier meets the qualified health plan's criteria set out, they're allowed under the Federal Facilitated Exchange. I'll try to go back and make sure I can get the citations for that to the committee. And if I find out that I was incorrect, I'll certainly let you know that as well. But that's my understanding.
Senator Pratt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would hope this would be a friendly amendment, given that through the discussion on the 12 hours in the Senate chamber that this was pointed out to be a market rule versus part of the exchange. So I'll request a roll call.
Further discussion? Secretary will take the roll on Pratt A13 amendment.
As amended.
Mattson.
No.
Brown.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Dahl.
No.
Thames.
Yes.
Gazelka.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Housley.
Yes.
Jensen.
No.
Latz.
No.
Pratt.
Yes.
Reiner.
No.
7-5. On a 7-5 vote, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion. Where does this bill go? Somewhere?
Health and state.
Which one first? I think health and local, they both are looking to hear this bill. I don't know which. Do you have a preference? Or I don't think anybody's asked the committee here to. Okay, sent to health. I think Senator Reinhart then will move the bill as amended and recommend it to pass and forward to the Health Committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Is that it? We're back in Wednesday at noon. Quite a few bills, so let's kind of be here on time and get right at them. Thank you.
Sorry.